Hello again. Yeah, got a bit of a cough today, but hopefully we can make it true. So, this is Seven Laws Blog UK. I am David, otherwise known as Hesediah, and this piece will be called Criminal Psychology, Implied Consent. Criminal Psychology, Implied Consent. Now, as I complained in previous articles, one significant weakness for a Gentile disputing the seven laws with a rabbi is that the oral law, where the codification and details of the seven laws are, is their turf, is the rabbi's turf. They're supposed to have a natural advantage over the Gentile since they have a heritage that has held and discussed that tradition for millennia. But when it comes to certain other subjects, that natural advantage ebbs away because it is outside of that tradition. Now, I've stated on a number of occasions on different platforms and forums that there is no evidence that the individuals that compose government or even the institution itself has authority, that is, the right to own others, the right to control others, dictating what they can or can't do. There was a rabbi, though, who chose to argue that point. Now, this rabbi and I have talked about this issue before. He did not persuade me, I did not persuade him. And we tend to disagree on topics, having prolonged and pointless debates. One of the approaches that he tried when it came to this government question was to bring up a name, John Locke, and the social contract theory. The argument they gave was fatally flawed in my eyes, but the conversation moved on. When the disagreement had gone on long enough, I protested, stating clearly that I wanted it to stop the conversation. And he did what happens many times online. He continued regardless of my overt statement of withdrawal of consent. Little did he know that with that act, he had taught me the truth about the social contract. Anyway, what is social contract? To summarize, it is the idea that man, or mankind, the people, chooses to give up some of his right, natural rights, so-called natural rights, in exchange for the protection that a government provides. The people who give up these supposed rights to this government that they institute... Let's try that again. The people give up these supposed rights to this government that they institute, create, or establish to help protect those rights. It is assumed that a person living in the territory of a government has become part of this agreement, hence implied consent. This is what this rabbi was using as evidence to say that there is positive evidence that one set of humans can have just claim to be able to control and own others. Now, there are significant, inherent and fatal flaws to this theory and the use of it by this rabbi. One fatal flaw is that this theory is purely and simply a rationalization for the observed fact that there is a ruling class and a subject class. What did not happen was that John Locke studied the history of many, many people groups and saw a repeated occurrence of people voluntarily coming together, discussing and making up their own rulers. This did not happen. The theory is just a person's guess or John Locke's guess at why rulers exist. But that is not objective reality, and it flies in the face of what reality actually shows, or what normally happens. Because actually what normally happens is that one way or another, people are conquered, or a few choose to impose their will on others. It's not this pretty picture of everybody just sitting together around some giant table at peace, discussing how best to organise, and they all universally agree to subject themselves to a few people. That is called fantasy. It makes perfect sense that this rabbi strongly affiliates with the United States of America, a country, a group of people, many of whom, I believe, have been supremely duped by the cults of personality and that of patriotism. Having such a vocal adoration of their founding fathers, constitution, and their form of servitude or government, having been nigh brainwashed by their pledge of slavery, well, actually it's allegiance. Allegiance comes from the idea of to the liege or to the ruler. It is little wonder that rabbis who are fans of that place would also be so deeply suckered or duped. Another problem with the social contract theory is that in reality, in real life, there is no such contract. It would not fit the necessary elements of a contract. So apparently, in a contract, there are two parties, something called the people and something else called the government. Can you see a problem there? Well, I see a problem. The people doesn't really exist. That party called the people doesn't really exist. I know that there are those who speak of the will of the people or representing the people, but what is the people except a group of individuals? And it could never be proved that all the individuals wanted this agreement. So does this people really exist in order to bind every individual to this contract? It could be argued that what is meant is that the majority of the individuals are the people. But this, too, doesn't make sense, because the force of the government as part of this so-called contract is imposed on all, regardless of consent, even upon the minority that had said no, or even the minority that just didn't give an answer, a positive answer. But remember, this is me pretending that such an arrangement actually happened in history. Didn't I say that this whole theory is just a rationalisation? There's no historical record of this agreement actually happening involving the people or the individuals that comprise it. Included in the elements of a contract is the legal consequence for failure to meet the terms. Wait there, what terms? What are the exact terms of this contract or agreement? Is it just some ambiguous statement of servitude for protection? But it's been stated by government courts that the government does not have a duty to protect the individual. Well, are these terms the laws? But then what sort of legally binding contract would include the idea that one side, i.e. the government, can change the terms of the contract, the laws, at will, such as writing more laws or rewriting them or getting rid of some? And speaking of consequences, if a government fails in these ambiguous duties or obligations for a person or for a small group of them, what's the consequence? Since the government normally judges itself, it'll normally find itself innocent. And even if it doesn't, this contract, so-called contract, doesn't become invalid such that those persons are no longer bound by the obligations the rulers impose. This notion of legal consequence is a farce when it comes to this so-called contract. And that proves that this social contract idea is also a farce. Another American friend of mine told me that the American Constitution was a contract, just a badly written one, allowing for all these inequities. Looking at what I've written so far, I can see just how badly it was written. But once again, his words fall into the delusion. At no point does the Constitution of America claim to be a contract, and it fails to contain the elements of a contract. But David, it's not literally a contract. Oh, I can see that. It's not a contract at all. But it is an agreement. And there's no record of such an agreement with all the... Damn, it's a rationalisation. It's a theory. It's not reality. It's just the attempt of a person to fit what he sees, that rulers rule and people are forced to obey, into his way of thinking. But notice what they slip into this social contract farce. Implied consent. In their eyes, in the eyes of those that have turned a rationalisation magically into absolute fact or into evidence that rulers have the right to rule, so in their eyes, by living in a place where a ruling class, a government exists, an individual tacitly consents to its dictates. Dear, oh dear. As was recently pointed out to me, how valid can an agreement be when it has power over a person from birth, before understanding, before consent? And how important can consent be if it's simply assumed? It should be understood that for a person who holds this social contract theory, consent, in effect, is backwards or twisted. It's backwards or twisted to such an extent that the proponent of such a theory thinks akin to a psychopathic rapist. How so, David? Think about it. The social contract proponent assumes consent without a person actually or explicitly giving it. Even if the person explicitly and openly says, "I do not consent," the government will still impose its will on that person. Does no mean no? Well, not to a rapist and not to the government, as if they're both different things. There is something quite circular about the thinking of a social contract proponent. The rationalisation sets out this agreement that never actually took place, and then the consent is assumed. It's gruesome thinking, especially when considering the injustices committed by government. The fact is that social contract theory, with all its fundamental flaws, is a baseless justification for one human or one set of humans owning, controlling, and abusing another. It is not evidence for the right of one group to own everyone else. It's only a rationalisation by inventing agreements that never actually happened. The rabbi's insistence at continuing the disagreement when I had openly stated the withdrawal of my consent to continue is a fantastic example of what government actually does. It imposes its will regardless of your consent, without any agreement. Before I had to forcefully end that discussion with the rabbi, I expressed to him that philosophies such as that of John Locke couldn't change human nature. The rabbi opined that government was needed because of human nature. He responded before actually understanding what I meant. I was saying that human nature makes authority, the right to rule, impossible. How so? It's generally believed that humans are created equal. I mean, we're all made out of the same stuff. We all grow up mainly the same way. There's no real difference between our natures. In this mindset, no human has the right to take another human's possessions without his consent or his life. No human has a natural right to tell another human what to do and expect obedience, except parents who seem to have property rights over their offspring for a time. So where then does the claimed authority of government come from? It cannot come from a bunch of humans who don't have that authority. The voter, as an individual, has no right to rob or tax another person, no right to dominate forcibly another, to kidnap him or kill him. Therefore, a group of them, group of individuals, don't have this right to rule. Therefore, they cannot give this right to some other agency which they call government. Therefore, government has no authority, no right to rule others, or at least to put it another way, therefore government has no basis, no just basis for authority, and therefore if they have no just basis for authority, they have no authority. As I've said before, the ruling class may have manpower, just like a gang or mafia. It possesses the faith of those duped into selling their souls to empower that same beast that dominates and steals from them. And this faith, this religion, is wider in extent and has a larger congregation than any other religion. In fact, it absorbs all the other religions because there's people in every religion that still devotes itself to this beast called government. It has the heart and devotion of the atheist and the theist alike. Even those supposedly in between, even though there is really no in between. So just like a gang, it can use the threat of violence to compel compliance. And that's what its thugs, its agents do. The rationalizations and devotion of its victims does help an awful lot too. I don't think I've covered all the stupidity and foolishness wrapped in the social contract theory. In fact, I know I haven't. But let me get to the point. There is no agreement between the people and the rulers. There is no real contract. There is just violence and the threat of it. So, that was the piece, Criminal Psychology, Implied Consent. I appreciate your time and I hope you have a great day.